sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series. And maybe sooner than we think.
This is going to be a tough play.
Shays has called it. Call it, JD.
Oh, baby.
Get out of here. You called it.
But we didn't come here to drink beer. We came here to win this ballgame. I said to the Uber boy, I said, take me out with the crowd.
The Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Sean Sears, and on today's episode, we have our friend Ryan Davis back on the show to preview this twin series we have coming up, a three-game set with a possible, most likely postseason team. We kind of go over the matchup quickly, talk a little bit about Kyle Hendricks and Rich Hill facing off against each other tonight, Friday, as well as just take a look at the matchups on Saturday and Sunday. And then we dive a little bit into this rotation, what it could look like for the postseason as the looks like the Cubs should secure one of the top three postseason spots. They should be a two seed, assuming they could hold off Atlanta, but they probably have this division now with a 5.5 game lead here. So we take a look at what this postseason rotation can look after we see Kyle Hendricks and Yu Darvish take game one and game two. Who comes in next? Alec Mills, John Lester, bullpen game. We kind of talk about that from there. And then some of the postseason seeding, as we're hoping. It looks like now, if the season were to end today, the Cubs would be facing the Giants, which is a way better matchup than the Phillies, just strictly pitching alone. But we take a look at who some of these teams could be, who could sneak in. Obviously, with about 10 plus games left here to play for most teams, things are starting to solidify, but could still very easily change with how many teams are kind of in and out of flux here for the postseason picture here. So we talk about that and more here on today's episode of Locked On Cubs, which of course is brought to you by CubsInsider.com. Head to CubsInsider.com to read about their exclusive as the Cubs set the dates for their fall instruction league, which includes a 20-game schedule. Read about that and more at CubsInsider.com, official partner of Locked On Cubs. You can get Locked On Cubs in whatever podcast app you use, whether that's Google, Apple, Spotify, TuneIn app, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave a 5-star review. And when you get into your car, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On Cubs. You can do that by telling the device to play podcast Locked On Cubs. And make sure you follow us on Twitter at Locked On Cubs. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. So with that, I'm going to kick it over to my interview with Ryan. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves by saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you for free with 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Or getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOn and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be a tough tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnMLB today. If approved, you get $15 of your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnMLB. GetRoman.com/LockedOnMLB. All right, Cubs fans, joined with me today is Ryan Davis. He is, of course, the co-host of the show. Ryan, how are you doing today, man?
Pretty good. Can't complain. What about you?
Yeah, about the same. Got an interesting series coming up here with the Twins. I guess probably a playoff team. That'll be a good litmus test for the Cubs, I think. But beyond that, I don't know. It's nice weather, surprisingly, even though supposedly fall's coming, even though we got like 90 degrees earlier. But
yeah, it's starting to cool off a little bit here. I saw it was a high of about upper 60s, low 70s for me. So I actually threw on a hoodie when I went for a walk this morning.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's nice. This is the perfect weather. I love you can wear a hoodie outside and still be comfortable, but like, you know, you can also take it off and still be comfortable. So
right. I also enjoy fall weather. It, you know, reminds me of postseason baseball and good memories and maybe not great memories as well, but yeah, I'm excited about the fall. I'm not looking forward to winter, but I'm excited about the fall.
No, winter will suck. Fall will be cool. It'll be even better if the Cubs actually do well in the postseason, but we'll see. But
yeah.
Coming up this weekend, like we were talking about, there is actually the Twins are probably a postseason team. They should be a postseason team, barring anything crazy. But they've played relatively well, 6-4 over their last 10 games. Nelson Cruz has been really strong for them. But a good litmus test for the Cubs, I guess Friday's matchup is Kyle Hendricks versus Rich Hill, which obviously former Cub, but kind of a completely different guy from when he was a Cub. But going into the series, what are some of the things you're looking forward to between their matchup with the Twins?
I want to see Darvish pitch well. I really would like to see him hone in on that NL Cy Young. Right now, I think most voters would probably lean towards Trevor Bauer, because Darvish's numbers, while they're great, are, you know, a few of them, like the ERA is just a little bit lower. The FIP is just a little bit higher. I'm sorry, both are a little bit higher. Just the numbers that I think the voters are going to be looking at. It's probably going to lean towards Bauer right now. And Darvish gets two more starts. He starts on, Sunday's game, I think the third game of the series against the Twins,
yes.
And then one more start that'll allow him to be lined up to start game one of their playoff series. So that's what I'm looking for, is I'd like to see Yu Darvish come out on Sunday. I don't remember if it's on Sunday Night Baseball or if it's Sunday, it's in the afternoon. I don't remember what it is, but a big dominant performance against a strong team like the Twins on Sunday would probably go really far for Yu Darvish. So that's the main thing I'm looking for out of this series. Other than that, I think at this point, it's weird to say, because the last 2 years, the Cubs have kind of fallen apart down the stretch, but we're 10 games to go in this weird ass season. And they're what, five and a half games up in the division. It just feels like they're, you know, they can go kind of into cruise control. I think 5-5 pretty much does it, you know, 4-6 does too, honestly. So I'm not like worried about this team, finishing out in first place. It seems like it's fairly likely at this point. So that's really what I'm looking at, is stay healthy. Maybe the offense start to come around, and Yu Darvish pitching well would be just a nice big boost.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like you were talking about here, that Darvish is very much in the Cy Young conversation, but yeah, it's probably leaning more towards a guy like Bauer, who's just numbers are just slightly better. But the rest of the slate for the weekend, it's obviously Hendricks and Rich Hill tonight. Saturday, it's Alec Mills versus Michael Pineda. And then Sunday, it's Yu Darvish versus Jose Berríos, which is...
That's a good matchup.
Pretty fun matchup. Yeah, that'll be a cool matchup. Darvish just had some of those star-studded matchups. Obviously, went up against Bauer a week or so ago, and it's kind of cool when that happens. But
right.
I pulled this note here from Mark Gonzalez about Hendricks, who's 2-0 and has a 1.66 ERA in his last three starts. He has, since 2019, has a 2.10 ERA, 19 starts at home, which is the third best ERA in the majors at home. The only ones better are Mike Clevinger and Hyunjin Ryu. But, I mean, that's a plus, right? Hendricks going at home. Obviously, we've seen the numbers trend to be, for whatever reason, he's just more comfortable at Wrigley. But I don't know. Hopefully, that's a sign for things for the postseason, too, with the way things are lining up, hopefully. Hendricks being able to, assuming the Cubs work in the way that we were just talking about, Hendricks should get a start at home for that first wildcard play-in series. I guess things to consider, sort of, kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess it doesn't matter once that play-in series is over, because it's going to be neutral sites. So.
Right. It does seem like Hendricks, even beyond the period of time that you just said, looking at his career splits, he started 85 games at Wrigley and he started 87 games on the road, and he has a 2.58 ERA at home, 3.75 on the road. So yeah, he's always been just much better at Wrigley Field for whatever reason. I don't know if it's just, you know, he's comfortable, or he has, you know, some sort of support system there, or part of a routine. I couldn't tell you what it is. If I were in the locker room in a normal season, I'd probably ask him, hey, what is it about Wrigley Field that brings out the best in you? Could be the, you know, slightly taller grass that Wrigley's known for on the infield that kind of slows down the rollers to the infielders. So like that could be part of it. But yeah, that's a guy that, yeah, anytime he's starting at Wrigley, it's basically must watch TV, because he's so good there. And it's part of what, you know, makes it so important that the Cubs do get that home field for that first round series that where they will play those all three of those games at Wrigley. You know, Hendricks most likely will be your game two starter. So if Yu Darvish goes out and dominates game one of a playoff set and you take a 1-0 lead, you feel really good about closing out that series in game two with Kyle Hendricks.
Definitely. And the other factor too is like you stay in your own beds. Like you don't travel. You don't have to worry about being on the road there. You're obviously home for hopefully two games if you were to win that series, but you know, three if necessary. So that's a huge advantage too. So one other thing I want to mention before we roll into a different conversation, I'm really excited to see Byron Buxton in this series. He's a guy that I've always kind of just slightly followed a little bit and been hoping he would figure things out after the hype that came through. He's been injured left and right. It feels like every year he has something going on. Even this year he had an issue, but he's got an 894 OPS. He's, I think, tied for second on the team in home runs with 12. He's scored only 18 runs, actually, surprisingly, but just a fun guy to watch. Strikes out a ridiculous amount. Doesn't really walk a whole lot. Creates a lot of things from his speed, but he's a fun guy to watch. I'm excited to see what happens with him in that lineup. Him and Miguel Sano are two guys that I feel like were people I heard a lot about when I was going to school in Iowa, because they were like weirdly Twins fans in Iowa. So it's nice to see these guys figure it out a little bit.
Yeah, I think it was prior to the 2017, or maybe it was the 2018 season. I can't remember which one it was. It was whatever year the Cubs picked up Chris Jimenez as the backup catcher and then quickly discarded him. I think it might have been 2018.
You're right.
Yeah, I was in the Twins clubhouse in spring training doing a story on Chris Jimenez and a couple others. And I got to see Byron Buxton. I got to talk to some of the beat guys there, and they were talking about how he had had an okay season in his first full year the year before, but it wasn't great. But they saw all the signs. And then he didn't play much in 2018. I think he was hurt. And he hasn't, you know, played a full season since, but he's gotten progressively better. And yeah, you're right. This year, he doesn't walk at all, which is insane. Like he has 114 plate appearances. Now that I have the stats up, he has one walk.
Yeah. Which I is saw hilarious. That too.
270 batting average with a 272 on base, but he has a 620, is a 622 slugging with 14 home runs. So, I mean, or 12 home runs. So, I mean, like that's really good. Those are really good numbers. I mean, he has, I think Ian Happ leads the Cubs with 12 home runs, right? So,
yeah,
he would be tied as the Cubs leader in home runs if he were on the team. So, yeah, this is a really good guy. I mean, he's a smart baseball player. He's fast. He plays great defense. He's a good hitter. You can't possibly walk him. So, yeah. Interesting guy. He's only 26 years old still. He's been in the big league since 2015. So, yeah, you're right. He's a guy that you definitely have to look at with this Twins lineup and kind of pay attention to what he's doing.
Yeah. Exactly. And like you said, a tough guy to walk because he'll steal a base or he'll take you deep. So it'll be fun to watch with that.
Outside of Nelson Cruz, he's, I would say, probably their best offensive player this year. I think it's fair.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Miguel Sano is a guy that's got a ton of pop, but he's batting 220, I think, with like a 299 on base. Like,
yeah,
boomer bust.
Right. Also 12 home runs, but yeah, it looks like Buxton's just been the better player. Nelson Cruz, so we could talk about that guy. That he's found the fountain of youth, I think.
Oh my god.
Like numbers, those are insane numbers. Those are MVP type numbers.
Stupid good. Yeah. And then the AL MVP this year is completely open, really, because like Mike Trout's going to be in the conversation, but like you got to look at the White Sox guys like Jose Abreu and Tim Anderson probably deserve some consideration. But Cruz is like, I mean, you could argue the Twins would not be nearly as good without Nelson Cruz. Like you look at the rest of the lineup and like guys like Buxton's hitting well. You've got like Eddie Rosario's okay. Marwin Gonzalez is a good contact hitter, kind of. He's supposed to be. He's batting 216. Yeah. But like the rest of this lineup, like they rely heavily on Nelson Cruz to drive them in, obviously.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, not to derail too much, but I pulled up his career stats. I know he's been a really great power hitter, especially late in his career. But I didn't realize he didn't really like get a full-time playing role with a team until 2009. He was 28 years old when he was with the Rangers. Yeah, yeah. And until he was 31, the most games he had played in a whole season was 128. So like he's hit 417 career home runs, and that's been the majority of that after turning 30.
Post 30, right? Yeah. So fountain of youth. Understatement of the year. This guy's right. Nuts.
340 home runs since turning 30. That's insane. I mean, this guy, yeah. I know he's a DH and people have their arguments about whether the DH should be in the Hall of Fame or not. I know he doesn't, like, he hasn't built up a ton of wins above replacement, but if you just look at his offensive numbers, especially late in his career, like, this guy's in the conversation.
Yeah, he should be. It's kind of criminal. He hasn't been talked about more. He's done nothing but be good, and especially post 30 to do all that is even more impressive. So
yeah,
well, good for Cruz.
Here's a fun way to do it. We could put together his 2019 and 2020 and see what that looks like. It's 169 games with 718 plate appearances, so a little more than a full season. He has a .313 batting average, a .396 on base, a .637 slugging with a .171 OPS plus and 57 home runs.
Like what?
at ages 38 and 39.
Yeah, that's nuts, man.
Yeah, that's insane. That's crazy offensive numbers. So yeah, he may not win the MVP, but I bet he's, you know, the top three when he finishes. Yeah. So that's a guy to keep your eye on, a guy who's probably going to, at some point or another, pound the ball out of Wrigley Field this week.
Yeah, I would say it's safe to assume. let's hope it's not against, like, Yu Darvish. That's all I hope for. But right. Anyways, talking about a little bit of this rotation, obviously, Tyler Chatwood, his injury, it sounds like more than likely he's not going to be a part of this team outside of, like, if the Cubs make a deep playoff run. We've got some news on Jose Quintana. It sounds like he's working back in a potential bullpen role more than likely. But how big of a hit is it that Tyler Chatwood's not going to be a part of this roster one way or another?
Yeah, that's disappointing. Really, since he went on the DL, I assumed that he at least wasn't going to be part of the rotation anymore. That's the big problem with this shortened season, is any sort of extended IL stint, and you really can't be a rotation option anymore because you can't go do rehab starts in the minors. So that's been kind of the problem with Jose Quintana, is they had no choice but to bring him back in the bullpen. Then he gets injured. Sounds like he's on his way back, but when he comes back, there's no chance to work him into the rotation. They have to put him in the bullpen. So, yeah, that's kind of left the Cubs with a very thin rotation and kind of no options. Emergence of Alec Mills, which we'll talk about a little bit more in depth soon, that's been huge for the Cubs. And John Lester being a little bit better his last couple times out has been really big for them too. But, you know, this rotation basically is just Darvish, Hendricks, and hope the offense scores runs. And in the playoffs, you're going to need guys who can step up. And Chatwood had the stuff to do that. We saw that in his first couple starts this year. And then the injuries happened and it just kind of fell apart on him. But it would have been nice if, you know, with a couple games left, if they had been able to add him to the roster, get him out there once or twice to see if he could throw an inning for you like he did, you know, last year when he was in the bullpen, maybe ramp him up, see if he can hit 98, 99, just, you know, give us something, see if we can, you know, use you as a weapon out of the bullpen. It would have been nice, but it just doesn't seem like it's likely to happen. Even if he is healthy, I know David Ross held the door open a crack and said, if we make it to the World Series, he might be able to pitch by then. But, you know, if you're making it to the World Series and having to put together your roster and Tyler Chatwood walks in and says, hey guys, I'm healthy, put me on the roster, you can be like, oh yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. let's cut, I don't know, Dwayne Underwood Jr. off the roster for you. Like, no, why would they do that? So yeah. It just seems like his time this year with the Cubs is done, and possibly for his career with the Cubs, because he's a free agent. I know it would be, they need starters for next year, and that's looking beyond the season a little bit. I wouldn't surprise me to see them go out and, you know, offer him like a 1 year, $4 or $5 million deal, bring him back on a relatively cheap deal, just to, you know, see, okay, if he's healthy, we can get something out of him. But yeah, it sounds like, sadly, no more Tyler Chatwood experience.
Yeah, that's a bummer, but you know, that it's probably probably what it is what it is at this point. But I, like you said, exactly, he's one of the few guys that was in that rotation that probably could have moments where he really could step up with the postseason, because he's got like a game plan going up there, but ultimately, like, he's striking guys out. Like, that's yeah. what his game plan is. And with a guy like Quintana or even like Alec Mills, it's more so like you're just pitching to soft contact and minimizing mistakes. So if mistakes happen a lot, you're not very effective that day. Whereas like Chad Wood could really just blow by a guy, even as a reliever role. Like, I would love to see him come in the sixth or seventh and just give you an inning or two if you can. And that'd have been a nice piece to have. But
yeah,
it's not. So don't worry about it. Sliding a little bit into the playoff rotation here a little bit. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the alignment for this rotation a little bit. Obviously, it's Darvish and Hendricks for game one and two for whatever series you're going into to start the postseason. But, you know, beyond that, kind of a question mark. Like you said, Alec Mills, obviously coming off a no-hitter, has pitched well. John Lester, encouraging starts, but still not, you know, a guy you're necessarily ready to throw in there in the midst of everything. How are you laying this thing out, I guess, for the Cubs if you're David Ross?
It may change by the time we get done with these final 10 games. Everyone gets mm-hmm. two more starts, and it looks like Albert Alzolay will get at least one as well. So
right.
I would assume the way they've treated Alzolay that there's nothing he could do to make a postseason roster, barring yeah. everyone on the team getting injured. So that I assume is out of the question. But right now you've got a 3-game set for a wild card round that you're guaranteed. So you've got Darvish and Hendricks. Assuming you win at least one of those games, somebody's got to start that third game, and that's your elimination game, right? So is it right. Alec Mills or John Lester? Experience and history says that you would trust John Lester in that game, but recent history says that Alec Mills may be better. So which way do you go on that? I guess you just kind of pay attention to what it looks like, you know, the rest of the way. If John Lester has two more starts that look okay and Alec Mills gets knocked around in one of his, maybe you justify going to John Lester. But, you know, if Alec Mills continues this trend and, you know, throws two more no hitters, I think it's hard to justify pitching John Lester in that game over him. So I think that's an interesting debate. There's also the chance that you could start one and plan to have that guy go, you know, because they are ready lefty. Maybe you start John Lester and have him go 3 innings, and then you bring Alec Mills in. That could be something too. So I think that's just an interesting debate. Where would you fall on this? If the season were ending tomorrow and you had to pick your third starter, who do you think it should be?
Yeah, I'd probably go Mills. I think just we've seen more consistency out of him, and I know the postseason, you know, you want to have guys that are battle-tested and whatnot, but I don't think Alec Mills is a guy you're necessarily worried about being rattled. He just threw a no-hitter. Granted, it was a 12-0 no-hitter and very few high-leverage moments outside of the no-hitter itself, but yeah, obviously he executes. He knows what his game plan is. John Lester, similar type of situation, but you're just not super confident. It really depends on like who the umpire is. if John Lester's cutter is working or not, and if he's going to get the corners. If he could paint the corners, then John Lester's really good. He's set and he can get ahead and then kind of then work those secondary pitches. But I mean, yeah, I think I'd probably tag team it, to be perfectly honest, like you were saying too, especially if, you know, you're worried about Lester getting tagged or there's a matchup that doesn't necessarily play to his advantage, maybe getting him through the first or second time through the lineup and then saying, okay, Mills, you take it from here. And then hopefully you get to Kimbrel, Wick and Jefferson close the game out, assuming that all three of those guys haven't been used a bunch in game one and two.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's interesting to look at their stat line. It's very similar. Alec Mills has thrown 52 and two-thirds innings. John Lester's thrown 51 and one-third. So an inning and a third more for Mills. The strikeouts mm-hmm. are almost even. Mills has one less strikeout. Mills has four more walks, so a little bit higher than Lester. But if you look at the hits, 54 hits for John Lester, 39 for Alec Mills. Obviously, 9 innings with no hits allowed is going to be a big part of that. But still, he's allowed 15 more hits, John Lester has. So when you're going into the postseason, that's a lot of contact, and what I assume just from the eye test is a lot of hard contact, where I think most Cubs fans who have watched every game Alec Mills has pitched this year would say, even when Mills is has had games where they're not as good, you haven't seen a ton of hard contact against him. There's usually a couple balls each game that get hit hard, but he does induce a lot of softer medium contact. So that's a guy that I would probably feel better about just the way I've seen him pitch for the season. But at the same time, John Lester in the playoffs is John Lester in the playoffs. And until he is an actual bad pitcher in the postseason, I have to assume he'll be good. Times when you thought that he was not pitching as well, when the Cubs go down the stretch and get into the playoffs, John Lester performs. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I remember I think it was 2018 where John Lester was starting to fall off, or maybe it was 2017. And then he performed well down the stretch and into the postseason. And, you know, in 2018, John Lester pitched that wild card game against the Rockies. Yeah, it was absolutely great in that game, despite them losing. So, like, you just have to kind of trust that guy sometimes. So it's not a choice that I think is easy. And I think I don't relish David Ross being the position he is, being a friend of John Lester's, being his former personal catcher. If anybody in that clubhouse knows John Lester better than anyone else, it's David Ross for sure. So that's not a decision that I would want to have to make if I were him.
No, I would hate it. But yeah, I think he would go in that scenario. If I had to guess what Ross would do, I would assume he'd probably give the start to Lester, assuming the matchup makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then you just have Mills ready to finish out that game and just ride Lester for as long as you can and just hope. You go from Mills and pray he doesn't have a bad outing too. Otherwise, you're probably losing that game. But
right. And Mills does have a history, a very short history with the Cubs coming out of the bullpen. And I feel like he's been pretty successful doing that. Just pulling up the splits now. But yeah, it seems.
Yeah.
Seems like
his swing stats are pretty good.
Yeah. As a reliever with the Cubs as a reliever in general, 13 appearances in his big league career, so not a ton. 4.39 ERA, not great, but 30 strikeouts in 26 and two-thirds innings. So he strikes out considerably more batters as a reliever. I'm guessing that's because his fastball ramps up a little bit. And
sure,
I could imagine, you know, if you're throwing a 67-mile-an-hour curveball with a 93-94-mile-an-hour fastball, that's probably pretty good. So, yeah, maybe that's what you do. Maybe you go to John Lester – and you just ride him, you know, the first three innings and then batter by batter until until you feel like he's getting in trouble. And then here comes Alec Mills for two innings. Maybe that's how you do it.
Yeah, that's probably the way I would approach it, assuming these guys continue to pitch where they're at. Now, if we see Mills really just continue to maybe take another gear or get just, you know, I don't know. I don't know what more you really need to see from, because even that no-hitter was pretty much just Alec Mills executing. It wasn't like we saw anything different. It was just he was really successful at it. So who knows? But, yeah, I mean, either way, it's not necessarily – you could have worse options to choose from. This could be Tyler Chatwood and Jose Quintana you were worried about having to take that fourth spot, assuming one of these guys didn't step up. So could be worse. But
yeah, what I think more about is that second round where you have to have five starters, right? Because there's no days off. So in theory, it's Darvish, then Hendricks, then either Mills or Lester for three and four. And then what do you do if you get to a game five elimination game? Do you bring Darvish back on 3 days rest? Do you start Albert Alzolay somewhere in there? I don't know. Those are questions that I've been starting to think about. It's getting kind of ahead of ourselves, because they still have to obviously qualify for the playoffs and then win that first wild card round. But it's such a weird postseason this year that, you know, that's just something I think you have to start thinking about is in the playoffs, you can't necessarily just assume that you can cut down to a four-man rotation like you normally would, because unless you're going Darvish on 3 days rest in game five, you might need five starters.
Yeah, no, I think it's all hands on deck is the way you have to approach. I think Albert Alzolay should probably be a guy that gets innings in the postseason at some point. Who knows if that'll happen. But yeah, if they get to the second round, I think you're going to have to, right? Like some combination of like Alzolay eating two innings or three innings, or maybe you work Dwayne Underwood for multiple innings if you think that's an option. Or, you know, I guess you could look at Colin Ray. Like those guys are going to have to be people that you have to step up, because you're going to need – whether you go straight bullpen or not, like someone's going to have to eat these innings, and it can't be your four starters. Like they just can't do that over a five game stretch. But yeah, you're right. We're definitely getting ahead of ourselves, but it's something I think you have to start considering at least a little bit, especially front office. I'm sure they've already identified who these starters are they're looking at potentially. And then I think it was September 15th was the cutoff date for players having to be added to the roster to be included on the postseason. So, I mean, they were definitely thinking about these things, but I guess what I'm more concerned about now is who the heck they're going to face. Cause there's some teams in here who like cough, the Reds. If they sneak into these stupid playoffs, I'm very nervous for their rotation, especially when Sonny Gray comes back from the IL. But right now it looks like it's going to be either the Giants or the Phillies playing the Cubs. How are you feeling about the postseason matchups though?
Yeah, I think there are some good matchups in here. I think the Giants are a decent matchup for the Cubs. But then I look at other teams and I think like, you know, I'd really hate to see the Marlins in the first round. Sixto Sanchez, man, that guy has just a wicked 100-mile-an-hour fastball. So I would not want to see that team, especially if, you know, if it's Sanchez versus Darvish. That could be, I mean, it could be a great game to watch, but it could be neutralizing your biggest weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's a team I would want to avoid. The Reds, for the reasons you said, the Cubs just seem to struggle with their starters. I don't feel like the Cubs are that bad against the Reds this year overall, but especially, you know, Trevor Bauer, Luis Castillo, Sonny Gray, at any given time, the Cubs have struggled against those guys. So even a guy like Tyler Malley is a guy that the Cubs have struggled against. So that's not a team that I would want to see in the postseason at all. And that's probably not going to happen in the first round, but I guess it's possible.
Yeah.
So with 10 games left, I guess it still could shuffle around and adjust in any way that the Cubs could, you know, realistically face any team except for like Atlanta, Los Angeles, or the Padres.
Yeah.
Any team in the playoff picture could be a Cubs first round matchup. So then you're talking about the Marlins, the Giants, the Reds, the Phillies, the Cardinals, the Brewers, even the Mets are only a game and a half out. So yeah, there's a lot of different options right now. If I had to pick like one favorite option, it might be the Giants, but you know, I don't know.
That's probably so hard to pick right. Yeah, I mean, in terms of like pitching, I think the Giants probably have the least like worrisome group, I would say, because like even the Phillies, like Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler have both pitched well this year. I wouldn't want to face them in a 3-game set. Jack Flaherty's terrifying, and we talked about that before we got on the podcast. And Adam Wainwright's Uncle Charlie, his curveball just seems to throw the Cubs in fits. So there's matchups to worry about for sure.
If I'm looking at the Giants, I would assume that Kevin Gausman is your number one. He's got a 4.05 ERA and 46 and two-thirds innings, but his FIP is better. He strikes out 12 batters per nine. He doesn't walk too many. He's given up some home runs, but overall, I would say he's certainly their best pitcher. But outside of him, number two is probably Trevor Cahill.
Yeah.
So that's a team it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't scare me a ton. They don't have a ton of bullpen arms that scare me either. Mm-hmm. Trevor Gott was their closer for most of the year. He's been terrible and is on the IL. Tyler Rogers has a 5.11 ERA. Wandy Peralta has been okay, but not great. They just don't have Sam Selman. That's like one name that I see on here. Tony Watson, who they still have, he's been good.
Yeah.
So they have a couple guys who have been really good in their bullpen, but overall, they just don't have much in the way of pitching. Their ERA as a staff is 4.74. So that's the team that I would say probably is the team that you would want to face in the opening round.
Definitely.
I haven't looked too close at the Phillies, but that's another team that I would think, you know, probably. They have good starters. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. is Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler, not guys you want to face in a short playoff series. But yeah, those are the teams that I think are most likely right now. And if I had to pick one, it would probably be the Giants.
Yeah, and even Jake Arrieta, I think he's on the IL. I don't know if he's going to be able to come back in time to be anything in the rotation, but like if he does, at least that's another like a John Lester type guy who's proven to be, I mean, not as successful as John Lester in the postseason, but obviously has had success in the postseason before as a Cub. So, but we don't need to talk about that. I think we remember that, but also,
yeah, I don't think Arrieta's coming back this year. And if he does, I don't know if they'd want to use him in a postseason game.
Yeah. He's been pretty much not great. I think he's got like a 5-something ERA when I was looking, but 5.08.
Allow me to transition here, but I noticed that our old friend Blake Parker is a reliever for the Phillies.
Yes.
And he has a 2.51 ERA this year. And it just reminds me that, you know, he was really good for the Cubs in 2013. And then he only pitched 21 innings with them in 2014. And then he was gone. And if you look, he's bounced around a bit in the big leagues, but going back to 2017, over the last 4 years, he has a 3.35 ERA and 209 in the third innings in the big leagues. So it makes me wonder, is there something that the Cubs just are really bad at doing with some of their pitchers? One of the guys you brought up who is a similar story is Casey Sadler, who has been absolutely insane with the Mariners.
Yeah, that sucks. that was a pretty annoying article to read a couple days ago. I'm looking at something from Greg Johns from MLB.com, and it's like this whole like, oh, the Mariners found Seattle and they found and Sadler found the Mariners or something like that. And it's like, of course, yeah, the Cubs cast off is instantly amazing. I think it was like he's retired 15 of the 17 batters he's faced, 5 2/3 scoreless innings, 8 strikeouts. It's just like, cool. Would have been fun if you did that like literally 2 weeks ago when you were a Chicago Cub, but I guess that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it just seems like they sign guys who are good and they immediately become bad, or they let go of guys who are bad who immediately become good. And that's frustrating. And I know that's more anecdotal than anything because of the examples we've talked about, like Rowan Wick, who is a guy they picked up and have done something with. But it just seems like the Cubs struggle with those bullpen guys. Whereas when you look at the Brewers, they seem to find guys and are able to, you know, get something out of them. They have their core bullpen guys over the course of the years where Corey Knebel was that guy, and then Josh Hader has been that guy. Now they have that. Is it Devin Williams?
Devin Williams.
Who's just filthy. They find these guys who are legitimate guys, and then they surround them with these cast-offs that just seem to get the job done. And the Cubs have been really bad at, you know, finding those guys who are going to get the job done.
Yeah. You want to know something filthy? Devin Williams has an 18.4 K per nine. Met just disgustingly good.
Yes. That's like Carlos Marmol in his prime good.
Yeah, right? Oh my gosh. Not so good. But yeah, bummer. One last thing I wanted to mention before we wrap up. The Cubs Insider exclusive is that the Evan Altman released the fall instruction dates, and it apparently includes a 20-game schedule. It's going to start September 27th is when players start reporting. There's the intake process on the 28th. Self-isolation for anyone receiving a test from all the way from the 20th, 29th. More screening on field first day is October 1st, and it sounds like the last day of camp is November 7th. But that's good news, at least for the Cubs. Obviously, you've got guys working in the South Bend off, you know, taxi squad offsite, doing stuff there. But hopefully they can maybe get a couple guys who – guys like Ed Howard, who hasn't probably played real baseball in like a year plus, some time to work out and just kind of get in the swing of routines, get acclimated with the club and other players. So it's nice to look forward to, at least.
Yeah, that's nice. It's good that they're still finding ways to get guys involved from the minors and that there is still some news on that. Because I know a lot of, especially the guys that, you know, you and I know who follow the minors pretty heavily and have over the last few years, guys who, you know, really covered the minors when the Cubs were building that farm system and then have continued to cover it, you know, maddeningly as the Cubs farm system has depleted.
Yeah.
I know that's been frustrating for those guys who do that. That's, you know, there's no minor leagues. There's nothing to watch for them. I know they watch the big league team too, but, you know, guys like Michael Ernst with Cubs Den, like that was his bread and butter. And I know that's been frustrating for him. So, I'm happy for those people. I'm happy for the minor leaguers who are going to get something to do. I just can't imagine how many guys because of the way things have changed and some of the even the pre-pandemic plan changes that they had on the minor leagues where they're trying to cut teams back. It just sucks. It makes me think about how many minor leaguers who are losing, you know, development time, who maybe could have been a good player, who at this point, you know, maybe they just don't have that opportunity anymore.
Yeah, it's a bummer. it really sucks to see a lot of these minor leaguers not get that opportunity. And then also too, for guys like Michael Ernst, who, like you said, is very much focused heavily on the prospect scene of things, not really having much to talk about. We had him on during the wait and see aspect of this season, whether or not we're going to have a baseball season. And he was like, yeah, man, it's like, not only do I not have prospects to talk, but I don't have baseball at all. So I'm just really bored. He's like, I'm grateful hockey's coming back. Otherwise I'd just be whatever. But yeah, it's nice to see at least that the Cubs are going to have some fall league action and 20 games to give some of these guys a chance to just play baseball. It's still not going to be enough. And it's going to, I mean, this season is already just put a massive amount of damage into like your future prospects and everything else in between financially for the next couple of years. But it's nice to see at least a guy like Ed Howard might get a chance to put on a Cub uniform and we can retweet the picture a million times because that's fun. But
yeah,
but
pretty much what you do with it.
Yeah. But with that, I think that's all I had for you here today. Ryan, is there anything you wanted to throw out there before I wrap up the show?
No, I'm just looking forward to a fun weekend of baseball and hopefully a slow wind down of the last 10 games. They'll clinch the division at some point, I assume. And yeah, we'll go into this postseason against whatever team they get, and they get two or three games. Then we'll see what happens.
You want to know something kind of interesting? Before I wrap up the show,
of course.
The White Sox just called up their 2020 pick, the number 11th overall pick, Garrett Crochet. Or is it Crochet? Crochet? I think it's Garrett Crochet.
Crouch?
Is it Crouch?
Is it?
I don't know. It's Crochet. Looks like Crochet, but I don't know. We're a Cubs podcast, and I'm also just on record for being absolutely awful at pronouncing names. That's why we have Ryan here. But
someone call Herb Lawrence and we'll see if he can tell us.
Yeah,
the White Sox.
I'll ask him. I'll have a clarification for the next pod. But yeah, that's awesome. White Sox calling up their top pick from this year's draft.
Good for them. It'd be really nice to see the Cubs get aggressive and do that with a guy like Braylon Marquez. Maybe they clinch the division and they've still got their three games left with the White Sox. Maybe Braylon Marquez comes up and throws 2-3 innings. That'd be okay.
Yeah, or even just Adbert Alzolay.
Yeah, we're probably dreaming a little too hard, expecting prospects to arrive.
I mean, hey, man, I don't know. I mean, it looks like, I mean, Cubs look like they're going to cruise into the postseason now, right? At least that's how it feels a week from like where we were a week ago. We were just like, man, this team's going to blow it.
Right. Well, what have we been saying for a few weeks now, right? They had the 13-3 start. Then the 25 games after that, they were 10-15. And I had brought this up and we've talked about it a few times. All they needed was one more really good stretch and they'd be fine. And sure enough, their last 9 games, they're 7-2. So your last 10, if you go 5-5, that means you were what, 12-7 in those games, in those final, you know, whatever, 29 games, whatever it is, 19 games. So yeah, that's good enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it is. They're here now. They've got the NL Central.
two decent stretches in a 60-game season is going to get you where you want to be, and that's all they need to do.
All right, that will do it here on today's episode of Locked On Cubs. Make sure, if you have not yet, you are subscribed to Locked On Cubs and whatever podcast app you use. Subscribe, leave a 5-star review. Make sure you tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On MLB, hosted by Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call him Selly. You can tell your smart device after this episode of Locked On Cubs to play the most recent episode of Locked On MLB. You can follow us on Twitter at Lockdown Cubs. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. And if you guys want to check it out, I wrote an NL MVP article, power rankings for Fanside. I read my top 5 guys. Of course, I put Ian Happ in that list. He probably doesn't deserve it, but it's my list, so who cares? But with that, thanks for tuning into your guys' Daily Cubs podcast. Enjoy the rest of your day. And as always, go Cubs.